Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Yes, it is a lovely morning, isn't it?
Now, more of the Morning Shift
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is in 10 seconds. It'll be 7 a.m. So appreciate y'all hanging out with us. Mike Johnson, Rob Tribble, Squid Billy, Bo Morgan. We will be live tomorrow morning from Falcons training camp. Everybody on the team tomorrow will be reporting, fellas. And obviously, 92.9 will be your eyes and ears throughout training camp.
Your only eyes and ears throughout training camp.
And hoping to have some real fun guests and do a lot of things. But I don't know about you, man. I feel like I'm reporting as well. Like, I feel like I'm reporting to training camp tomorrow morning.
Yes, so it's funny because I was around some people last night, and they're like, "Oh, you got training camp soon." I go, "Yeah." Said Wednesday's the first day. "Oh, it's exciting." I said, "It's exhausting." Oh. And then I was like, and I feel like I shouldn't really be saying that because I'm not out there practicing and killing it, but it is exhausting because it's first off, you're really excited for it. So you lose energy there. But, you know, you do a whole show, and then you go right to practice, and then you do interviews after practice, and then you gather the sound and send it out, and then you still got to live the rest of your life. But it consumes everything. It's just like the perfect blend of – it's kind of like going to an amusement park. Like, you really enjoy it, but it wears you out each day.
And here's the thing – and I have a number of questions for y'all concerning this because I will say this, and I've said it a number of times on the show. Training camp is by far and away, and it's not even close, the worst part of being a football player is the 4 weeks or whatever you live in the dorm. And look, it's funny when you on reporting day, which will be tomorrow for the Atlanta Falcons, like we said, you report, and everybody, it seems like everybody has like a suitcase and then like one personal item. Like, you see different guys walk in with like one personal item. Somebody might
stuffed
even bring
animal or what?
Well, yeah. A coffee maker, a PS5. Some people, I just distinctly remember some guys bring in their own mattress. I'm not going to sleep on anything else for them. Speaking of the Olympic Village.
Yeah, right.
You think anybody
would bring like their own personal item.
Did anybody walk in with a Pelican box full of like their iRacing rig?
No, but if I was going to camp right now, I'd be that guy.
I probably would.
If Mike Conti called me and you were like, "Hey, y'all have to stay in the dorm for the next 3 weeks."
Oh, I'd definitely.
First of all,
take
my
it.
Wife would probably leave me, but second of all, I'd probably pack the rig.
Well, you know what I mean? We could sit next to each other on different systems and race, and then you know what?
We might overwhelm the Wi-Fi.
It actually might be a bad thing because after the way you wrecked people last night, including me, I might have had a scar or two.
You see how Dylan wrecked the ecosystem with this? The federal budget is on fewer pieces of paper than this. Magna Carta, I mean, the Warren Report took fewer pieces of paper than what you just gave us here.
I've seen a radio host in the city who's popular for this type of tree treatment that would be ashamed of you.
Look, Warren Sharp writes a 600-page preseason preview for the NFL. It's on a PDF file for me. This is getting close, though.
Yeah,
like it might have come. This might be 550.
I actually need to compare this to the Phil Steele College Bible that I have here and the thickness and see which one wins out.
I haven't gotten mine yet. What's wrong with me? I need to get that.
Yeah, you gotta get over that. I think Barnes and Noble's where I got mine.
And those are dying quickly. Those boxy stores. But what is this? The future power rankings?
Wow. Sure, man. For the next 2 years.
Doesn't it come down to one thing? You have a great quarterback still on his rookie deal. There you go. That's how you
is well, it? No, that's not true. That's not
you
even
know what
remotely
I mean.
True. No,
what, the Falcons.
No, I'm talking about for future power rankings. If this is if you want to have an optimistic future, you have a great quarterback on his rookie deal with about 2-3 years left.
I think you're thinking opposite, man. I think that listen, let's go through, and I'll tell you. The number one's Kansas City Chiefs. That's not a rookie quarterback. Baltimore Ravens, 2-3 Buffalo Bills, 4 Detroit Lions, 5
Eagles. It
wasn't
an all-encompassing observation.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was just kind of, I was subtly mocking all the information, and I summed it up very succinctly opposed to all the information we got.
All those teams in the future just very recently had quarterbacks on rookie deals, and now they're in the second year. And in a rolling.
It is interesting to see. So this and what we're talking about, if you haven't seen it, ESPN puts out their future power rankings. It encompasses the next three seasons. So you get all the way down to number six, and we'll talk about the Falcons in a second. You get all the way down to number six before you get a quarterback actually on their rookie deal, which is C.J. Stroud with the Houston Texans. I'm a big believer in the next 3 years in the Houston Texans. I'm a big believer in D'Amico Ryans and Will Anderson and everything else going on with that
team. Those are boys, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it's they are two Bammers, so I will throw that out there. But I think everybody who has watched that team and watched what they were doing, I think the question will be in the next 3 years, and just to focus on them for a second, you're going to see Bobby Slowick, the OC, is going to get a head coaching job in the next 3 years. And what is D'Amico Ryans able to do as far as a succession plan on the offense with C.J. Stroud? You have to be able to bring in that guy that can continue to do the things that Bobby Slowick's doing.
Slowick interviewed a lot. Did he turn down anything, or he just wasn't off?
I remember him interviewing a lot. He interviewed here, and then he kind of at the last minute, I think, pulled his name out. It was him and maybe Ben Johnson as well that were like, I think we're good.
Yeah, I think I think he. I want to say they called him and he at one of the jobs, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm going to go back." He made it public that he was going to go back, and he did it a little bit cleaner than Ben Johnson did as far as letting people know he wanted to go back. I honestly think it's a couple of things. I think he just wants to be an OC for a couple of years and kind of learn how to perfect that before he tries. Because here's the deal, and Mike, you and I had this conversation last year about Arthur Smith, and it's funny. Why are you hiring a guy like Slowick or Johnson? Because of their play-calling duties and their play-calling duties alone. So if they get here and they are so overwhelmed that they can't do both, then you're losing the reason you hired them as your head coach in one way or the other.
Right.
And so that's actually why I liked Raheem, is Raheem has, for one, he's done every part, every coaching job essentially, on both sides of the ball, wide receivers coach, passing coordinator, DC. He's been a head coach, so he's learned that, and he also has learned enough to go, I'm gonna hire a guy to come run my defense that will run the things I want. I'll have input on that, but I also won't be so taken over to this side that I can't help with this side.
Oh, yeah,
with
he intimately knows the details of every facet of a football team,
and that's what makes a great leader, a great manager.
Well, let's
a get game in. Manager, clock manager, all the things, situational manager.
Let's get into what the Falcons scored. So if anybody's out there wondering, in these rankings, the Falcons came in 24th, which is a score of 75.9. And look, the coaching, 76.7, that's NFL ranked 23rd. Front office, 71.3, that's the 28th in the league. Quarterback, 80.3, that's 14th.
That one bothers me. That's the only one that really bothers me. Is I think that –
I think it's all right.
But do you think
do you think he should be top 10, solidly in the top 10?
Well, I think quarterbacks, it's not just quarterback, right? It's a quarterbacks. It's both. It's
sure.
So why, how is what we have, dude, I'm going to tell you something. I'm hearing all these people talk about how you might not see Michael Penix Jr. this year, and I think in a perfect world you don't.
Yep.
But I'm going to tell you something. If Kirk Cousins goes down, I don't think any way in hell they're rolling Taylor Heinicke out there. Maybe to come in a quick moment in the middle of the game. But I think if they had a week or more to prepare Michael Penix to come in and be the starter, why would you not? Why did you draft him then? And I know the succession plan, but why did you draft a guy to sit to you? He wasn't a guy that was – he was probably as pro-ready as any of the quarterbacks, to be honest with you. So why would you have him on your bench and roll out Taylor Heinicke?
I don't think I think Penix would be in.
I do too.
I think you're telling two different stories, though. I mean, the question is, is the quarterback room for the Falcons over the next 3 years ranked 14th? I think that's a fair ranking.
I don't. I think that Cousins is a 10-12 guy, and I think Penix there is a backup plan is better than better than more than half the teams in the league.
But with zero NFL resume.
Well,
yeah, that's my thing. Like, how can you say he's better than half the backups in the NFL? He's never played an NFL down.
Well,
There's backups in the NFL that have played 10 years.
Well, Sam Darnold's played how many? Eight? And I would take Michael Penix Jr. every day, all day, of a guy like Sam Darnold. And that's my point,
but
though.
But is Sam Darnold going to be the backup? He's going to be the starter, probably.
That's my point. That is my point exactly. I think Michael Penix is better than him today, and he's having to start for a team. That's the point I'm making is there's so many bad backups in this league. We saw that last year. Desmond Ridder is the backup in Arizona right now. If Kyler Murray goes down, and I'm not docking Desmond Ridder, but I'm telling you, we've seen that.
But I think my point is, and I agree with what you're saying, my point is that Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy are not ranked higher than 14. Like, that's the point. We're not talking about, is this the best backup quarterback situation? No.
What I'm telling you, it says quarterbacks.
All-encompassing, yes.
That's
we have
my
a quarterback
point.
And Kirk Cousins that we hope and think the world of. He's never really done it. He's never won a Super Bowl. He's not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Also,
and you have another guy who's a rookie that's never played down.
But he was also playing at MVP level last year when he got hurt. And I'm going to tell you that Michael Penix, I think, is as good, if not better, than half the backups out there.
Oh, you certainly hope so.
I think Michael Penix is probably right now better than our entire quarterback room last year.
Yeah.
I'd say that's safe to say.
Well,
I'd say. I don't know. I mean, it is safe to say, but again, it's the unknown. And I'm gonna I am hoping that you're right. Don't get me wrong.
I'm
trying
I'm
to
right
look
too.
At this from a blimp view and say that you know if I'm the rest of the NFL, I'm not really that
more than half
fearful.
Of first round quarterbacks end up being busts. So.
Right.
Yeah, and I know I sound like roses and sunshine right now, whatever that saying is, but I have that hope. That's why you did what you did. I don't want to see Michael Penix this year. Why do I not want to see Michael Penix this year? Because I want Kirk Cousins to be healthy all year. Because I think that's your best chance of winning. That can be true without saying that I think our backup plan is a lot better than most teams in the league. And I think Kirk Cousins, like last year, Kirk Cousins was playing at a top five level. Now, yes, he had Justin Jefferson, but remember when he went down, Jordan Addison was just now starting to become a dependable guy.
But didn't Cousins have as many touchdown passes as Mahomes and Josh Allen over the past 5 years, something like that?
Probably, yeah.
So he's
very good. You can go back and say, well, he only won one playoff game, blah, blah, blah. Matthew Stafford had never won a playoff game, and he went to the right situation. Zach Robinson's not Sean McVay, blah, blah. Okay, well, how do you know that he's not the next great play caller in the NFL? That's who trained him, was Sean McVay. Kevin O'Connell was trained.
You can't possibly know.
Matt LaFleur had never been a play caller, but what, 1 year? And then he went to Green Bay as a head coach and was able to figure it out.
Listen, I think you're saying things we all agree with and we hope are true.
But I'm just
if
saying
I'm looking at it from a blimp view, I'm fine with 14th.
Mm.
It's okay. Like let everybody be shocked when your 3-year succession plan works out and where Terry becomes the biggest genius in NFL history because Kirk Cousins goes for over 4,500 yards for the next two seasons, and then Penix takes off as a 10-year vet and goes in the Hall of Fame. Like, and let everybody be shocked.
I will say all that, and I'll still never come off what I said after draft night. I would have rather had a guy that I know could start day one and contribute. And both things can be true.
I agree. And I honestly think 80% of Falcons fans probably agree with you.
But it's also yeah, because it's okay to be optimistic. It's okay to say, you know what, I can't
for
change
sure.
anything, so I'm going to look at
I think they got a good player. Well, there's reasons for optimism.
Yes,
there's tangible reasons for optimism.
But also, I also believe what Red said in Shawshank, which is hope is a dangerous thing.
Well, get busy living, get busy dying.
Well, that might be the thing. That might be true about our Braves. That hope is a dangerous thing.
Well, whatever you do, if you get signed by the Braves, you're probably going to get hurt before you even step onto the field to take your first pitch,
or go into immediate slump.
Oh, jeez. The absurdity of the Braves' injury woes continues. Plus, in the huddle, Aaron Rodgers speaks. Jordan Love, he's in the building, but he ain't practicing. Coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to get on down now.
We're talking all things Atlanta sports and beyond. This is The Morning Shift.
Make some noise!
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Star brought to you by Zero Res, a smart, lasting, clean. Braves find themselves 8.5 games out of first, a 2.5 game lead in the wild card over the Cardinals. Look at the Mets.
Amazing Mets.
The Amazons, just 3 games out. Where did this one come from?
I don't know.
Holy smokes.
I don't know.
Ronaldo Lopez last night gave up a run in the first inning for the first time all year, which is kind of interesting. But Ellie De La Cruz, how fun is he to watch? That might be one of the most exciting plays in baseball, seeing him leg out a triple.
Dude, there's a couple players for the Reds that take that extra base, right? And that's just, and I know that we talked about it, till we were blue in the face on this show, and Bo and I have gone back and forth, is that you don't have that person that kind of ignites that lineup, right? And I think it's easy to say, well, Jared Kelnick's doing this, and he's had some hot streaks, he's had some ups and downs, but we like him at the top of the lineup, even when Michael Harris comes back. And
but his on-base percentage isn't quite what you want
but the thing is,
he has been a bit of a spark plug-ish, kind of.
But, I mean, we're talking about an MVP candidate last year at the top of that lineup that stole 70 bases, right? And when you kind of look at the two, and you look at the Reds last night, and you take the extra base, and then you get a ground out, and move the guy from second to third, and then there's a fly out, and the runner scores from third. Those kind of things are what wins baseball games. And when you look at the Braves right now,
and it's just a thing of beauty to watch too, for that matter.
They're just simply not doing any of the small things. I mean, it's very obvious they can't hit, but when you can't hit, there are still things you can do to try to win a game. You make the small plays, play great defense, this, that, and the other. And for the last couple of days, it ain't even apparent.
Yeah,
it's not even close.
That's a sign of pressing to me. When you're not doing the things that you can normally do, sometimes it's due to pressing. To your point about Ellie De Cruz, I mean that triple in the first inning, and then the fly ball that he scores on. Duvall's got a good arm. Duvall plays the ball right. Duvall didn't make a terrible throw.
It was slightly up the line. But I think you have a better chance. It was slightly up the line. A good throw may have gotten him. He may have gotten his hand in there, but it's kind of up the line a little bit.
That throw might have gotten a lesser runner is really the point for me, or made it a closer play. But that's how fast that guy is.
Oh, he's amazingly fast.
We also talked about Matt Olson and the inability to pick the Austin Riley throw out of the dirt. It just compiles when you start putting all those things together. And Ronaldo Lopez, to your point, you talked about him, giving up a first inning run. I don't think he pitched awfully last night, right?
I mean, statistically,
when you look at it, it's a little bit out of the box for him when you talk about how low his ERA's been and he's all-star team and all that. But when you really sit down and look at it, I think he probably made 2 bad pitches last night.
Well,
like 2 really bad pitches.
To your point, Mike, 2 of those runs to me were attributed to De La Cruz's speed.
Agreed.
And that means it's a 2-1 game at the end of the game if you don't have De La Cruz out there. So I actually don't disagree with you at all. I mean, I think we and I feel like we disagreed a lot the last couple of days, but I think you're spot on there.
Well, I think the only thing we're disagreeing on is the direction of this team, because I am a little bit nervous, and I know that he's in control of it. And Alex Anthopoulos, most trusted GM in the city of Atlanta, if not the southeastern United States, will make all the right moves. But keep hey, we need a corner outfielder, we need a starter, we need this, that, and the other. I'm just not sure that this team is worth slapping on 4 Band-Aids for. You know what I mean? And getting rid of prospects. Like, at a certain point, you look at it and go, there's really nothing good going on here other than your top 2 starting pitchers and your 4-hole hitter.
Well, that's the point I keep trying to tell you, is he's not getting rid of prospects that have a future in this organization. And I don't know how many times. And I know that's what I keep hearing people saying. I'm like, guys, he's never done that. Even when he went out and made moves that in the 21 season, when it was
you bring in Jock right after Ronald Torres' ACL.
You did, but that was before the expanded playoff as well, which is something we have to remember. But that point that he didn't get it, he's not going to ever get rid of anyone he thinks has a real future. He's a little bit overcautious because of what happened to him in Toronto with DeGrom.
Well, let's go in the huddle, shall we?
The latest NFL news, rumors, reports, and happenings.
Within the Huddle on the Morning Shift.
I gotta say, I like the way that Jordan Love is holding out by technically not holding out. At all the meetings, he's at the facility all day, just isn't practicing, trying to renegotiate his deal. It's been offered up that by Friday, he may become the highest paid player, quarterback in NFL history.
Would that be malpractice? General manager malpractice?
Yes.
I think so.
Look,
he's had half a good season.
Yeah. He had a great.
And I think highly of him, too. I get that. But the body of work to justify. But that's the going rate for quarterbacks now, if you want to keep your guy.
I think that, and this is honestly, this is the danger of the whole, hey, we're going to let this guy sit for a few years. This is the danger, right?
Thank you.
Because now he's kind of got you, right? He's kind of got you. Do you want this to continue? I mean, God forbid you're like, hey, we're not signing you. And he comes out and balls out and he hits the open market, right?
Mike,
and then you're definitely going to pay a premium.
You are so right. And this is my point all along about you, when you have a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal, you take advantage of it. Like, look at they are doing in Houston. They were able to go out and get another star receiver, whether he might be in the twilight of his career or not, it doesn't matter. He's still on that roster and he can help the young guys.
Seattle did it with Russell.
Yeah.
We don't have a Legion of Boom without Russell being on a...
Well, you also don't have Legion of Boom without them, to your point, Rob, without signing like 10 defensive linemen that get all capable of 5 to 10 sacks in a single season. And having, you know, the linebacking crew.
The only dream is a Falcon fan.
It's so frustrating to me, too, as an NFL fan, because you look at these situations, and you have to start asking yourself, and I know that we've kind of had the whispers that there's been maybe one or two NFL owners that have asked about a quarterback salary cap, maybe separate from the rest of it, because it gets so out of hand. You talk about the money that the Cowboys were looking at with Dak Prescott. You talk about the money the Dolphins were looking at with Tua Tagovailoa. It's like 20% of the cap. You know what I mean? And the cap is only going up, and these quarterbacks and these agents know that, and they're charging more and more and more and more. And you look at a Jordan Love, and you have to actually ask yourself, and I never thought this would be a thing, would you rather have a Geno Smith of the world that's going to cost you half of that kind of salary and is still serviceable at quarterback and has played a number of years in the league, or to pay a guy that's had half a good season and extend him for $200, $250 million? You have to genuinely ask yourself that because of the amount of money that you're forking out to some of these quarterbacks.
Well, if you can somehow cultivate a generational defense, you know, it'd be nice too, right? Then you can live with a Geno.
I just hate that it's gotten to the point where we kind of hope our quarterback sucks for a little bit. So, you know what I mean? So you can take a little bit of a discount. I hate that we think about what Jordan Love looked like when he entered the building at Mercedes-Benz last year and played here. What was that, week two? I mean, it just.
Yeah, and he didn't look very good.
No.
And
Jesse Bates pick him off twice?
No, that was Bryce.
That was Bryce.
Jordan Love, though, he.
He did pick him off, though.
Jordan Love, like, fumbled the snap late in the game. He just kind of fell apart. That was. I remember coming in here and talking about it and saying, our guy rose to the occasion and made the plays, and their guy crumbled. And we were. And that was when it was like Desmond, you know, and then it. Completely reverse course midway through the season.
Yeah, and look, man, like I said, I'm happy for Jordan Love, and this is one of those situations when you are in the locker room, you never talk about another man's money, you never get in another man's pockets.
Right.
Hey, do what you have to do. All right, if you have to hold out, you have to hold out. Do what you have to do for your own security, because at the end of the day, and you look at, you know, most fan bases, hey, we want you to play, you know, big fans, you know, player for life. You got to do what you got to do. But it's just frustrating as a fan to look at it and say, dude, at what point are we going to look at you and say you're the highest paid player in the league? That's what you're looking for? It's just ridiculous to me. It's unbelievable. He doesn't deserve that. And we just got done talking about a 3-year plan and the succession plan. And of course you love that, but I mean, come on, dude.
Okay, but could you give him, speaking of 3 years, a 2 to 3 year deal that gave him really good money, but not. You know, not the top dollar money, not like Joe Burrow money or whoever has gotten paid the latest, because they get paid so often these days. I honestly forget. But could you do something like that?
I don't know. It seems like in the last month we've talked about different kind of situations involving NFL contracts than we ever have.
Who do you trust more right now, Jordan Love or Baker Mayfield?
Baker.
That's a crazy.
I'd say Baker.
It's a crazy question, ain't it?
Yeah.
But who do you trust more, Dak or Jordan Love?
I trust Dak.
I do too. I think Dak's better right now today. today. So
Baker Mayfield's a prime example of what I just said about Geno Smith.
I mean,
they're getting a good quarterback, but he's not making that money.
And look what happened with New York when they signed Daniel Jones that money because he had that one good season, right? He had one good season. They signed him, and then they lose Saquon because of it. And now your GM's on
Hard Knocks
saying, well, we got to, you know what? The best play we have for our $40 million quarterback can't be handed off to a $13 million running back. That can't be it.
Yeah,
but that
with a lot of wear and tear.
I do love the footnote that comes out of this. They're like, "What are you going to do about having quarterbacks in camp?" And they go, "Sean Mannion, the quarterback's coach. People remember him at Oregon State. Was a quarterback at Oregon State. He's a quarterback. He'll throw some drills. You know what I mean? He'll dust it off. He spent six or 7 years in the league.
Right. Yeah, with them.
Yeah.
He was with them, I think.
Can you imagine Zach Robinson going out there and getting the old thing wound up a little bit and saying, hey, let's let this thing dig?
No, they'd look over at Dave Archibald.
Art.
Hey, 16. You got a few throws in you.
Wait till Matt brings the twins out to practice.
Yeah.
Hey, Matt.
Number two.
Get her loose.
Rob would walk right over there.
Falcons need to use me when Penix gets active.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, lefty.
The lefty spin?
Yeah.
Yeah, they say it's harder to catch, man.
It's a different, thing. Way.
Nobody throws that 7 to 10 yard intermediate over the middle pass like Rob Tribble.
Is that what it is?
Let's throw what?
The 7 to 10 yard intermediate pass over the middle.
The safeties.
Hey, look him off. There he is. My dump pass.
Oh, I can change my arm angle too if I'm under pressure. Listen, watch me.
He's an older Tua, is what he is. He's making it rain out there, left handed.
Well,
Steve Young, if you will.
Don't hit him in the head, then.
I don't have his concussions, just the THC polluting my brain. This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart, Lasting Clean. All right, what do we got?
Oh, we got Top 5 Tuesday, Rob. We got an Olympics flavor to this one. You won't want to miss some of the nostalgia I'm about to throw at your ears here in about, 5 minutes. That's coming up on the other side.
How many honorable mentions are there?
One. Only one. Well, five, but they're all in one category.
They're growing.
Sports Radio, 99 The Game.
Good morning.
Yeah!
Back to more of the morning shift
with Tiffany, Mike, and Bo on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Tomorrow, training camp starts for the Atlanta Falcons.
Bring it on.
Indeed, yes.
Bring it on.
NFL top players, because it is list season, right? You wanted to touch on this. We got Kirk Cousins at 81 and Chris Lindstrom at 88.
88?
Yeah.
You better not tell Pro Football Focus. They got Lindstrom as the best overall guard, and at 88, there's got to be a guard above him. I like Lindstrom. I think he may be the top 10 guard, maybe top 5. Not.
Yeah, the Pro Football Focus, some of the guys surrounding them, and obviously I watch guard a lot, and I'm a big Chris Lindstrom fan as well. But Chris Lindstrom, I don't know if is as, what's the word, well-rounded as some of the other top guys.
In my pass protection, of course.
Right. I think that Chris Lindstrom is very, very good at this guard version of the Jason Kelce role, where you can move laterally, you can get to the second level, you can latch on, you can drive guys. He actually is pretty good at posting on double teams, which you don't usually see for a smaller-bodied guard, which he is. The issue is when you look at the Mike McGlinchey's of the world and some of the other top guards in the NFL, you are talking about guys that pass pro at a very, very high level, that north and south run block, goal line situations. Like, think about the goal line package for the Atlanta Falcons last year. You're not asked as a guard to do pretty much anything that other guards in the NFL are being asked to do. The whole Jonnu Smith speed sweep looms so large in my head talking about last year because you didn't have A-gap run plays. You weren't asking these guys to pull or to really get it up into some of these middle gaps. And that really, to me, was the downfall of the Arthur Smith offense. And some of the two-man routes downfield.
Real quick, do you think that there would ever be a time in his career where they go, hey, we want a guy that looks more like Bergeron at the other guard. We're going to slide you over to center and try to get you to play there?
I think it's possible.
Because I think he's smart enough, and I think he's athletic enough.
I think it all depends on who is the head coach and who, because he's got a long career ahead of him, and he's going to play a lot more years. And so when you look offensively at what they're being asked to do, if they went to more of a pro-style, zone read kind of thing in the backfield, then, yeah, I could definitely see that happen because he is very Jason Kelce-esque. I don't know what he's listed at as far as his weight. But it's not over 300, I can guarantee you that. It's probably not even over 290 if you realistically look at it.
So, wait a minute. If Michael Penix ever sees the light of day this season, Jake Matthews, did you just go to the other side?
No.
Is that simple?
No. That's just not something
Jake, I don't think who would replace Jake? I mean, this
but
year.
But you have a left-handed quarterback.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see that. No,
it's not the Storm Norton thing. I mean, I can tell you that. Yeah, well, it's not going to be Caleb McGarry.
At least he would see guys coming.
Well, the thing is, I get that that's a thing. I just think that's probably more of a old school slash under center slash, you know, a fandom thing. I don't think most people even think of it that way. You know what I mean? I don't think the Miami Dolphins are going out of their way to say this guy's left, this guy's right. I mean, it just is what it is. And you run so much out of shotgun these days, and we don't know what Kirk Cousins is going to be asked to do, or Michael Penix, but you run so much out of shotgun these days that you kind of know where the pass rushers are, and you know there's – you used to have this whole thing where you'd run a little waggle play, a little half boot, and you'd turn around. You didn't want that guy in your face and everything else. You can kind of see it coming a lot these days, so I don't think that's that big of a deal. And not to mention, Jake's pretty good left tackle. I don't think you'd want to change that. So I think Jake could do it. Jake was a right tackle for, I don't know, 2 weeks as a rookie when I was in my last year.
Yeah.
And I think Sam Baker got hurt against the Houston Texans in a preseason game, and I distinctly remember Mike Tice. We were on the sideline. Mike Tice walks towards – Jake Matthews, and he looks at him, and he goes, "Hey, by the way, you play left tackle now." It's like, oh, okay. Oh, that's simple
wouldn't
enough.
Tice, like 6'8"?
Yeah, it's huge.
6'8"'s a little bit aggressive. I think he's probably my height or a little bit shorter. Yeah.
He had a bigger head than you, believe it or not.
That's shocking, actually, if that is indeed true.
No one is the size, speaking of Sam Baker, no one is the size human as Dave Baker.
Dave Baker is the most massive person on the planet.
When you go to
his dad,
football Hall of Fame president.
Dude, he has I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I'm not sure if his head would fit that door. Like, his head is, he is the biggest man I've ever seen.
Ever.
In
speaking
person.
Speaking of big head, let's hit a mic, though.
It's time to rant.
Excuse me?
It's time to rage.
It's time for Mic'd Up
on the Morning Shift.
All right, here we go, fellas. Top 5 Tuesday. I got the top 5 moments in Summer Olympic history as far as the U.S. goes. All right, Summer Olympic history. Now, I started doing this as Olympic history, and then you get to the Miracle on Ice and some other things, and I was like, no, that's a little bit too much. A little bit too much. So we didn't go. I'm not throwing Usain Bolt in. This is just straight up U.S. Olympic history as far as the Summer Games go. Now, Bo asked about an honorable mention. I do have an honorable mention. And I said it was one. It's actually 5. I'm talking about the Fierce 5 gymnast. I think it was Michaela Maroney, Gabby Douglas, Allie Raisman. They scored the gold for the Team USA. It was a big deal. Everybody remembers kind of the Fierce 5. I got them an honorable mention. I think he could have slid them up. It wasn't
as
dramatic.
Maroney had a famous meme with her kind of pouty look.
Right. That was in her individual. She gets silver, and she kind of gives this kind of look, like pursed up lip look. Like, yeah, I'm not really excited about having silver. Rob, I do need help with you off the top, so let's hit this first one.
Number 5.
Because the TV coverage back in 1988 wasn't quite what it was these days as far as the Olympics go, there's not really great sound to talk about around this one. But Greg Louganis in 1988 in Seoul, Korea, hits his head on the diving board in the preliminary rounds, gets sutured up. I can't remember. It was something weird with his stitches, where they used stitches from like a sofa or something. Something crazy like that. You know, and there was all this craziness years later about the fact that, that he didn't say that,
rebar,
what his health situation was throughout that. But anyways, he comes back, gets a near perfect score on his gold medal round diving and wins gold. So that's 1988. Yep. I don't know if you would have been paying attention back
then. I remember it very well. Yeah, very vividly. Hit his head same time you did. Of course, he burst onto the scene in 84.
Yeah.
So he was dominant for quite a long time.
All right, there you go. Number 5, Greg Louganis. Let's move on.
Number 4.
Look, this one burst onto the scene as a 15-year-old, but then 4 years later in Rio, 2016, Katie Ledecky swimming the 800-meter freestyle final to a world record of 8:04.
She's so far away from them. Ledecky, gold medal. Ledecky, world record. Katie Ledecky of the USA reigns supreme yet again.
8:04.79, a new world record, a new Olympic record.
She was the gold medal winner in that event by almost 12 seconds, like half the length
of
the
pool. I remember that. She was
beating the tar out of everybody. Yeah. So that's Katie Ledecky coming in at number 4.
You know, quickly, it's amazing how, like, Janet Evans was really young when she was dominant in swimming.
Yeah.
And you have these bigger, stronger female swimmers. And you have these little bitty girls just dominating. Yeah. It's a weird thing.
To me, the height thing in swimming is always crazy. Like, Michael Phelps, long, dude.
Long.
Long, man. Got those slippers on him. All right, let's move on.
Number three.
Number three, this one happened just down the road, and he's a namesake of mine. When Michael Johnson appeared at the Olympics, he's running the 200-meter final, and you love this moment.
So is Frank Fredericks, and here comes Michael Johnson. They're approaching the top of the straightaway. Michael Johnson reaching deep. He has the lead, but Fredericks is still there, and so is Otto Bolden. But Michael Johnson has dead aim on the finish. Michael Johnson running for the lead, and into Olympic history. A new world record. He set a world record. He just
scored. The gold cleats of Michael Johnson
running straight up.
Oh man, that is just such a magical moment in United States Olympic history to watch that happen.
You know, Carl Lewis actually got the gold in the long jump, I believe, in '96. Everybody, he was kind of an afterthought. But he saw him win the gold in the long jump.
Yeah, I remember watching that live because obviously, I mean, I was 13. I didn't get to go to the Olympics, even though it was in Atlanta. It wasn't on our radar. Something we were going to be able to attend.
I worked for NBC, had the credential with the infinity sign. I could go anywhere, anytime.
All right, let's move on.
Number two.
This one is 2008. It's the 400-meter freestyle relay in Beijing, and a young man named Jason Lezik.
I just don't think they can do it, Dan. I mean, Jason Leegzak has been there. How many times in his career has he anchored this free relay and medley relay? But I just don't think he can do it. He's trying to ride that wave as much as possible.
Bernard is pulling away from him. The United States trying to hang on a second. They should get the silver medal. But Leegzak is closing a little bit. Can the veteran chase him down and pull off a shocker here? Here comes Leegzak!
Well, the announcers gave him up for dead.
I got chills right now. And that's why I said, Dylan, you got to make sure you include this part because it's just so good. That silver medal. Hey, got that silver medal.
He's falling way behind.
Yeah, you have on the replay, Michael Phelps is just, they're having to bleep out his words because the microphone's like near his face and he's just every F word under the sun. All right, got to move on quickly. Let's go to number one.
Number one.
Number one, everybody remembers it. The ankle injury that happened just down the street in the 1996 Olympics. It's a young lady named Carrie Strug.
Carrie Strug is hurt. She is hurt badly.
Well, Tom, we saw her limping after the first vault.
She has either twisted her ankle or something worse, standing on one leg. We have got to find out if she's... A 9.712, she has done it. Carrie Strug has won tonight. She was there for Bella, for her team, for her country, and for herself.
I love that line, man.
You can do
it, Callie. She was there for Bella. She was there for a team.
Yeah.
She was there for
Bella
her country, there for herself. Carrie Strug, number one.
Yeah. No Mary Lou Retton on there, huh?
Nope, didn't have it.
Bella coached her, too?
Yeah. I remember watching that one, too, because that was same year. Obviously, that I don't think I watched an Olympics as much as I watched the 96 one. Maybe,
for sure. Still blows my mind that it was here.
I will say this. Maybe the 92 Lillehammer games, because there was so much controversy. Was it 92 or 94? But there's so much controversy around Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan and everything.
That was crazy.
92.
That was crazy.
So, did watch those a lot. No, it had to be 94, right?
Yeah.
It was winter.
Yeah, 94.
I recommend watching Tanya Harding and Jeff Galooly's wedding night video. You're welcome.
You actually recommend that?
No,
you sure?
No, thanks. I'm okay.
We all should get Galooly'd from time to time. 404-726-0929.
No, I'm good.
Who needs a wake-up call, perhaps? Jeff Galooly.
Or you.
Nah, never.
I'm out of here.
Nah.
Good morning.
Yeah!
Back to more of the morning shift.
With Tiffany, Mike, and Bo on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Tomorrow, training camp starts for the Atlanta Falcons.
Bring it on.
Indeed, yes.
Bring it on.
NFL top players, because it is list season, right? You wanted to touch on this. We got Kirk Cousins at 81 and Chris Lindstrom at 88.
88?
Yeah.
You better not tell Pro Football Focus. They got Lindstrom as the best overall guard, and at 88, there's got to be a guard above him. I like Lindstrom. I just don't. I think he may be the top 10 guard, maybe top five.
The Pro Football Focus, some of the guys surrounding them, and obviously I watch guard a lot, and I'm a big Chris Lindstrom fan as well. But Chris Lindstrom, I don't know if is as, what's the word, well-rounded as some of the other top guys.
And my pass protection, of course.
Right. I think that Chris Lindstrom is very, very good at this guard version of the Jason Kelce role, where you can move laterally, you can get to the second level, you can latch on, you can drive guys. He actually is pretty good at posting on double teams, which you don't usually see for a smaller-bodied guard, which he is. The issue is, when you look at the Mike McGlinchey's of the world and some of the other, you know, top guards in the NFL, you are talking about guys that pass pro at a very, very high level, that north and south run block, you know, goal line situations. Like, think about the goal line package for the Atlanta Falcons last year. You're not asked as a guard to do pretty much anything that other guards in the NFL are being asked to do. The whole Jonnu Smith speed sweep looms so large in my head talking about last year, because you didn't have A-gap run plays. You weren't asking these guys to pull or to really get it up into some of these middle gaps. And that really, to me, was the downfall of the Arthur Smith offense. That and some of the two-man routes downfield.
Real quick, do you think that there would ever be a time in his career where they go, hey, we want a guy that looks more like Bergeron at the other guard. We're going to slide you over to center and try to get you to play there?
I think it's possible.
Because I think he's smart enough, and I think he's athletic enough.
But I think it all depends on who is the head coach and who, you know, because he's got a long career ahead of him, and he's going to play a lot more years. And so when you look offensively at what they're being asked to do, if they went to more of a pro-style, you know, zone read kind of thing in the backfield, then, yeah, I could definitely see that happen, because he is very Jason Kelce-esque. I don't know what he's listed at as far as his weight, but it's not over 300. I can guarantee you that. It's probably not even over 290 if you realistically look at it.
So, yeah, wait a minute. If Michael Penix ever sees the light of day this season, Jake Matthews, did you just go to the other side?
No.
Is that simple?
No. That's just not something
I don't think who would replace Jake? I mean, this
year. But you have a left-handed quarterback.
I see that.
It's not the Storm Norton thing. I mean, I can tell you that. Yeah, well, it's not going to be Caleb McGarry.
At least he would see guys coming.
Well, the thing is, I get that that's a thing. I just think that's probably more of a old school slash under center slash a fandom thing. I don't think most people even think of it that way. You know what I mean? I don't think the Miami Dolphins are going out of their way to say this guy's left, this guy's right. I mean, it just is what it is. And you run so much out of shotgun these days, and we don't know what Kirk Cousins is going to be asked to do, or Michael Penix, but you run so much out of shotgun these days that you kind of know where the pass rushers are, and you know there's – you used to have this whole thing where you'd run a little waggle play, a little half boot, and you'd turn around. You didn't want that guy in your face and everything else. You can kind of see it coming a lot these days, so I don't think that's that big of a deal. And not to mention, Jake's pretty good left tackle. I don't think you'd want to change that. So I think Jake could do it. Jake was a right tackle for, I don't know, 2 weeks as a rookie when I was in my last year.
Yeah.
And I think Sam Baker got hurt against the Houston Texans in a preseason game, and I distinctly remember Mike Tice. We were on the sideline. Mike Tice walks towards – Jake Matthews, and he looks at him, and he goes, hey, by the way, you play left tackle now. They're like, oh, okay. Oh, that's simple
enough.
Wasn't
Tice like 6'8"?
Yeah, it's huge.
6'8"'s a little bit aggressive. I think he's probably my height or a little bit shorter. Yeah.
He had a bigger head than you, believe it or not.
That's shocking, actually, if that is indeed true.
No one is the size, speaking of Sam Baker, no one is the size human as Dave Baker.
Dave Baker is the most massive person on the planet.
When you go to
his dad, yeah.
Hall of Fame president.
Dude, he has I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I'm not sure if his head would fit that door. Like, his head is, he is the biggest man I've ever seen.
Ever.
In
speaking
person.
Speaking of big heads, let's hit a mic, though.
It's time to rant.
Excuse me?
It's time to rage.
It's time for Mic'd Up.
On the Morning Shift.
All right, here we go, fellas. Top 5 Tuesday. I got the top 5 moments in Summer Olympic history as far as the U.S. goes. All right, Summer Olympic history. Now, I started doing this as Olympic history, and then you get to the miracle on ice and some other things. And
right.
I was like, no, that's a little bit too much. A little bit too much. So we didn't go. I'm not throwing Usain Bolt in. This is just straight up U.S. Olympic history as far as the Summer Games go. Now, Bo asked about an honorable mention. I do have an honorable mention, and I said it was one. It's actually 5. I'm talking about the Fierce 5 gymnast. I think it was Michaela Maroney, Gabby Douglas, Allie Raisman. They scored the gold for the Team USA. It was a big deal. Everybody remembers kind of the Fierce 5. I got them an honorable mention. I think he could have slid them up. It wasn't as
Maroney
dramatic.
Maroney had a famous meme with her kind of pouty look.
Right. That was in her individual. She gets silver, and she kind of gives this kind of like pursed up lip look. Like, yeah, I'm not really excited about having silver. Rob, I do need help with you off the top, so let's hit this first one.
Number five.
Because the TV coverage back in 1988 wasn't quite what it was these days as far as the Olympics go, there's not really great sound to talk about around this one. But Greg Louganis in 1988 in Seoul, Korea, hits his head on the diving board in the preliminary rounds, gets sutured up. I can't remember. It was something weird with his stitches, where they used stitches from like a sofa or something. Something crazy like that. You know, and there was all this craziness years later about the fact that, that he didn't say that,
rebar,
what his health situation was throughout that. But anyways, he comes back, gets a near perfect score on his gold medal round diving and wins gold. So that's 1988. Yeah. I don't know if you would have been paying attention.
I remember it very well. Yeah, as I said, hit his head at the same time you did. Of course, he burst onto the scene in 84.
Yeah.
So he was dominant for quite a long time.
All right, there you go. Number five, Greg Louganis. Let's move on.
Number four.
Number four. Look, this one burst onto the scene as a 15-year-old, but then 4 years later in Rio, 2016, Katie Ledecky swimming the 800-meter freestyle final to a world record of 8:04.
She's so far away from them. Ledecky, gold medal. Ledecky, world record. Katie Ledecky of the USA reigns supreme yet again.
8:04.79, a new world record, a new Olympic record.
She was the gold medal winner in that event by almost 12 seconds, like half the length
of the pool. I remember that. She was
beating the tar out of everybody. Yeah. So that's Katie Ledecky coming in at number
four. Quickly, it's amazing how, like, Janet Evans was really young when she was dominant in swimming.
Yeah.
And you have these bigger, stronger female swimmers. And you have these little bitty girls just dominating. Yeah. It's a weird thing.
It, to me, the height thing in swimming is always crazy. Like Michael Phelps, long, dude.
Long,
man. Got those slippers on him. All right, let's move on.
Number three.
Number three. This one happened just down the road, and he's a namesake of mine. One Michael Johnson appeared at the Olympics. He's running the 200-meter final, and you
in
love this
person
moment.
Saw it.
So is Frank Fredericks, and here comes Michael Johnson. They're approaching the top of the straightaway. Michael Johnson reaching deep. He has the lead. Is still there, and so is Otto Bowman. But Michael Johnson has dead aim on the finish. Michael Johnson running for the round and into Olympic history. A new world record.
The gold cleats of Michael Johnson.
Running straight up.
Oh, man. That is just such a magical moment in United States Olympic history to watch that happen.
You know, Carl Lewis actually got the gold in the long jump, I believe, in 96. He was kind of an afterthought.
Saw him win the
gold in the long jump.
Yeah, I remember watching that live because obviously, I was 13. I didn't get to go to the Olympics, even though it was in Atlanta. It wasn't on our radar. Something we were going to be able to attend.
I worked for NBC, had the credential with the infinity sign. I could go anywhere, anytime.
All right, let's move on.
Number two.
This one is 2008. It's the 400-meter freestyle relay in Beijing, and a young man named Jason Lezick.
I just don't think they can do it, Dan. I mean, Jason Leegzak has been there. How many times in his career has he anchored this free relay and medley relay? But I just don't think he can do it. He's trying to ride that wave as much as possible.
Bernard is pulling away from him. The United States trying to hang on a second. They should get the silver medal. But Leegzak is closing a little bit. Can the veteran chase him down and pull off a shocker here? Here comes Leegzak!
Well, the announcers gave him up for dead.
I got chills right now. And that's why I said, Dylan, you got to make sure you include this part because it's just so good. That silver medal. Hey, you got that silver medal.
He's falling way behind.
Yeah, you have on the replay, Michael Phelps is just, they're having to bleep out his words because the microphone's like near his face and he's just every F word under the sun. All right, got to move on quickly. Let's go to number one.
Number one.
Number one, everybody remembers it. The ankle injury that happened just down the street in the 1996 Olympics. It's a young lady named Carrie Strug.
Carrie Strug is hurt. She is hurt badly.
Well, John, we saw her lifting after the first fall.
She has either twisted her ankle or something worse, standing on one leg. We have got to find out if she's... A 9.712, she has done it. Carrie Strug has won. Tonight, she was there for Bella, for her team, for her country, and for herself.
I love that line, man.
You can do
it, Callie. She was there for Bella. She was there for a team.
Yeah.
She was there for
Bella
a country.
Caroli.
There for herself. Carrie Strug, number one.
Yeah. No Mary Lou Retton on there, huh?
Nope, didn't have it.
Bella coached her, too?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember watching that one, too, because that was same year. Obviously, that I don't think I watched an Olympics as much as I watched the 96 one. And maybe
for sure. Still blows my mind
maybe,
that it was here.
I will say this. Maybe the 92 Lillehammer games, because there was so much controversy. Was it 92 or 94? But there's so much controversy around Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan and everything.
That was crazy.
92.
That was crazy.
So, did watch those a lot. No, it had to be 94,
it had been 94,
right?
Yeah.
It was winter.
Yeah, 94.
I recommend watching Tanya Harding and Jeff Galuli's wedding night video. You're welcome.
You actually recommend that?
No,
are
thanks.
You sure?
No, thanks. I'm okay.
We all should get Galuli'd from time to time. 404-726-0929.
No, I'm good.
Who needs a wake-up call, perhaps? Jeff Galuli.
Or you.
Nah, never.
I'm out of here.
Nah.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon. And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.